Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. What's the outlook for the rest of TV 2021? Some perspective for you, courtesy of CNetNews.com senior reporter Joan Salzman, when she joins me next. Netflix's latest documentary special, Out Tomorrow, is out to rock your mushroom world beyond bites of portobello or shiitake. Fantastic Fungi director Louis Schwartzberg comes by next half hour. Also ahead, a tale of two Olympic TV environments, bad on NBC, promising on Peacock, WWE's first scripted miniseries, and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and presented on Amazon Music, Vrbo, the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, and Apple Podcasts. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later on in this program. 89 degrees at the top of the hour, and it's great to be back with you on this Monday afternoon for the program all about TV's current and future. I had a great time up with my family in Baltimore, Maryland, seeing the wedding of my niece, Melissa, and her new partner in life, Ted, down at the Renaissance Harbor Place Hotel. It's the Renaissance Harbor Place Hotel right across the Inner Harbor in Baltimore. Absolutely beautiful time. Fantastic ceremony. Just absolutely great. And now the wonderful couple is getting ready to go on their honeymoon later on in the week. We have some wonderful guests for you, and we invite you to be part of the program. All it takes is a phone call from you. So pick up the phone and dial in at 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe. You're on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio. Shy about the phone, no problem with us. Use our chat room. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk, Speaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions, and other people will be live with you. We hope to have Joan Salzman joining me, our FOP, friend of the program, live with us here in the Big Apple, right after these news notes. Heading into day four of the 2021 Summer Olympics from Tokyo, NBC is so far pulling record low viewership for primetime broadcast coverage, while NBC Universal mega content enterprise Peacock is off to a promising outcome. NBC's primetime replay of the opening ceremonies Friday had 10.4 million people tuning in, way down from 26.3 million catching opening ceremonies from Rio de Janeiro 4 years ago. Overall, 16.7 million viewers watched NBC's four opening ceremony presentations combined, including the live coverage Friday morning. NBC's results Saturday night barely ticked upward, 10.7 million people tuning in. As for Peacock, NBC Universal officials say the service had best usage ever on Saturday this past weekend, without being more specific on viewership. Also, for the first time ever, more than one linear broadcast or cable channel in English offered primetime coverage. NBC USA and CNBC had events last night. More Peacock news for you. The service will soon present Beyond Salem, a miniseries featuring past and present characters from long-awaited NBC daytime drama Days of Our Lives. 5 episodes are planned. A miniseries by WWE is under development at Blumhouse Television, and this first-ever WWE scripted adventure of this nature will have Vince McMahon as both executive producer and key subject. United States of America versus Vince McMahon explores WWE's 1990s fame and controversial legal troubles over alleged steroid distribution to its stable of pro wrestlers. No word yet on who will get that miniseries. Now, new web and social media content provider PopSugar launched a fitness channel earlier today on Vizio Smart TV sets. The service will offer hundreds of at-home workouts involving a variety of fitness personalities. Now, quickies before our first guest, Trevor Noah has started work on The Tipping Point, a set of documentaries on recent events and their impact on world culture. September 20th will serve as kickoff night for Fox's 2021-22 season. The opening night attractions, 9/11 Season 5 launch, followed by new drama, The Big Leap. CNBC will chronicle daring corporate crimes and their masterminds on the new series Super Heist starting on August 9th. And Variety reports that Lucifer co-executive producer Joe Henderson is working with Netflix on a live-action Pokemon series. No confirmation from either Henderson or Netflix. And that is news notes for today. Now joining me live here in the Big Apple in an Internet Radio exclusive, our very good friend of the program, CNetNews.com correspondent Joan Salzman. Hi, Joan. Happy Monday to you. Oh, I think that is somebody else. Hold on for 1 second. I'm going to get Joan on the line. We had a little bit of a switch up on my computer screen. So let's see. I think Joan should be aboard right now.
Hi,
Joan,
can
you there?
You hear me?
Hi. Yes, you are aboard. Happy Monday to you.
Happy Monday. How are you?
Very, very fine, thank you. So, Joan, we're now in the second half of TV 2021. What's on your radar screen when it comes to television for the rest of the year?
Well, I'm really interested in seeing what happens with Netflix slate. You know, they've had this kind of slower period, not only in growth, but only, you know, their sort of delayed production delays, the effect of those kind of really hit in the first half. So I'm curious to see what's going to happen with Netflix and when they start to have some of their big franchises come back in the second half of the year, and whether or not that really is going to sort of kickstart the growth that has been wanting in places like the U.S. and Canada for Netflix.
You did a story last week on news.com about their move into gaming. They've hired a former Facebook Electronic Arts person to develop that project. And on the conference call last week, Greg Peters was saying that while they may start doing it with mobile games, the TV is definitely going to be like the end result, and it may even end up being the beginning of a new push in interactive TV.
Yeah, well, you know, they have a history with some interactive stories in the past. What I thought was interesting out of that call is, you know, even though mobile gaming is the sort of launch pad, and that makes a lot of sense because those are sort of casual games generally. They're things that people have, are easier to pick up. You're not going for a hardcore gamer, which is definitely a big group of people, but it's not as big as a more mass audience for mobile gaming. But I thought it was interesting that he said any device that supports Netflix is a candidate for gaming, which could mean you have some hardcore console gaming potentially down the road. So it seems like they're definitely having a very wide open field of what's possible. We're just going to have to wait and see what it actually looks like and if it's any good.
Do you think that Netflix might also use gaming as a launching pad for new live action or animated shows?
Yeah, I think they're definitely going to want to try. You know, like the executives talked about how there's going to be a pretty porous barrier between the IP that they already have now and also potentially developing IP within gaming and using that as the sort of breeding ground to create something that spins off into television or film on their own service. So you could definitely see where there could be some cross-pollination going from gaming to TV and film, or going from film and TV to gaming, all within the Netflix orbit. It'll be interesting to see. And, you know, I think it'll also be interesting to see if Netflix goes out and finds some external IP, you know, a comic or a book series, and decides to license it not only for television for series or for film, but license it for gaming. It'll be really interesting to see what bets they make if they go out and license IP externally, what bets they make just on gaming initially. You know, they have such a track record with film and television, but what are they going to go out and say, this really makes sense as a game before we try it as film or TV?
Are you getting a sense, Joan, that before this year is out, we are going to see not only Netflix, but all the mega content services, Amazon, Hulu, HBO Max, and so forth, really rev up original production?
You mean in gaming or original production for
film,
television?
Series.
Yeah, I think that everyone is trying to have as much ownership as they possibly can over their content. We've kind of exited the licensing realm, and with your own services, like certainly licensing out your IP to other services once you don't run is still lucrative, but everyone's trying to hold on to have as much control over the content that they're making as possible, use it for their own, and then license it possibly later. I'd only see that increasing as time goes on.
Joan Saltzman is CNetsNews.com senior reporter covering TV and a lot of other digital things too, and she joins us live here in the Big Apple this half hour on Tomorrow. We'll be televised. Prime, I'm with you live from New York, and this week, by the way, we are wrapping up our 14th year on the air. If you have a question or comment for Joan, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And we will wrap up year 14 on Friday, and we got a great lead guest for you. The host of Noir Alley on Turner Classic Movies, yes, the man from the shadows himself, Eddie Muller. He's also the head of the Film Noir Foundation. We'll talk to him about where Noir Alley is going from here. And we'll also ask whether or not Noir Alley might do some TV noir on his series. He also, by the way, has a brand new version of his great book, Dark City, about the history of film noir, and we will offer that as a classic trivia prize starting on Monday, 1 week from today. So join us for Eddie Mueller from Noir Alley, live and exclusive with us, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific Friday, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Joan, let's go back to gaming and, for that matter, the whole of interactive TV. We've got, you know, Food Network Kitchen, now a year and a half, almost 2 years old. We've got Peloton and other people doing interactive fitness on the TV set. We announced today that Pop Sugar is now doing a fitness service on Vizio Smart TV sets. And we had the big news last a week or so ago of GenVid getting $100 million in funding and one of the key players at Netflix, Cindy Holland, joining them as an advisor to that service. What is your sense about the interactive TV world? Do you see that perhaps this fall might be the year that interactive content, interactive advertising may break loose?
It's pretty premature to say. You know, I think we've seen a lot of people try to make television interactive, and there have been a lot of barriers for that to really seem to have a breakthrough moment, right? Like, one of the problems with television being interactive when you're actually watching on a TV is that, you know, your input device, now you have options in terms of voice that's becoming more prevalent, but mostly it's your remote, and remotes aren't designed to provide a lot of interactivity other than up, down, left, right, yes, no. And certainly it's difficult given that there's such disaggregated styles of remotes, and every TV set has a different remote, and then you've got the streaming boxes that have different remotes, and depends. It's just so disaggregated to know what your consumer at the other end is going to be using in order to do something interactive, that it can be really frustrating depending on what kind of interaction you're talking about. And certainly there are ways where you have lower level amounts of interaction. You can do things by voice, which is, you know, voice, so long as there's a microphone and voice enabled, that people know how to, everyone knows how to use their voice. But being interactive with voice can still be really challenging, especially in a TV environment. And so it should be interesting, you know, to bring up Netflix again, it'll be, it's, I think, smart of them to sort of leverage their mobile app and start with mobile gaming, since that's a form factor that people are very comfortable doing gaming with, doing interactivity with, because pretty much everybody has a touchscreen on their mobile phone. That's kind of the par for the course. And so you know that a lot of people will have a very flexible form factor, a very flexible device for interactivity. So certainly using television, interactive television on a mobile device, you can see a lot of runway for that. But interactive television on devices like TVs themselves, it's going to take a while, and technology is going to have to progress to a point where there's a lot more freedom of interactivity for it to really make sense on that big screen and the biggest screen in the house.
Mm-hmm. Going back to gaming, though, you have Apple with Apple Arcade, you have Google with Google Stadia. There's talk that Xbox might try a TV venture with their Xbox gaming system, that one that you use your voice or your remote control to control how you maneuver the game as opposed to a console. How do you see that side of the gaming world developing?
I think it's – well, I mean, just talking about Xbox, you know, Microsoft has tried to do television in its Xbox orbit for a lot of times. This is something they've tried a lot, maybe not in this incarnation. You know, in the past, it's been trying to create television content out of their franchises and the Xbox gaming world. And generally speaking, that's a very disappointing track record on that side. But, you know, more broadly, it'll definitely be interesting to see people experimenting. Like, you know, you've mentioned all these names. Amazon's also doing stuff with Stone Gaming Studio and Cloud Gaming. That'll definitely create more opportunities for successes, and certainly there's going to be failures. But the fact that so many, especially well-capitalized, gigantic companies are putting effort into it, just by virtue of the fact that there's going to be more trying, then we're going to see things that actually work, I assume. It's just a matter of, you know, how many failures are there going to be? And will those failures prevent any further investment? You know, is this tide going to keep rising, or will the difficulty of creating this sort of form of entertainment when it's not something that you're already really well versed in, is that going to inhibit future investment before you can get to the point where there's going to be a real breakout?
Joan, since we last had you, it became really clear that we are seeing these multi-channel bundles like Pluto TV and Xumo and Tubi are now becoming programming players. Roku is now a programming player. Vizio is now creating original channels like the Pop Sugar channel that was launched today, the fitness channel. And Samsung is maybe trying to become a programming player. What's your take on that? The fact that it's not just a mega content universe, it's now a universe where these smart TV devices and bundles that are going through them are now trying to get into the originals game.
Yeah, you know, I think that has a lot to do with the specifics of each company. So, like, take Roku, for example, getting into original content. I think that Roku understands and they're approaching their original content in this way. They understand that they can't compete with, like, HBO or Netflix. They're not going to try to take big swings and make Emmy Award-nominated programming because Roku doesn't want to be a subscription-based product, right? It's advertising is its game. It's licensed all this content to be able to stream to people free in order to get that advertising revenue. And they're not going to be trying to make really expensive programming in order for people that would justify people paying them money. They really are trying to create this content that is sort of complementary to what they already have. It's not a bit, it's not a hefty lift in terms of how much they have to invest to make it. It's not original, but another great example of how they made that kind of strategic investment is in the formerly known as Quibi programming. You know, it's very rare that you can get the caliber of those stars for the price they had to pay just buying it up. I mean, it's basically unprecedented that there was a company that made this really high production value content with really big stars and then had to sell it off in a fire sale, basically. But both those tactics, the original content side and then this sort of Quibi original content investment that they made, it makes a lot of sense to Roku, right? Because it's an ad-based, they're sticking with ad-based platform. And especially like with the other services that you mentioned, those are also ad-based platforms. And so I imagine that for the time being, we're going to see a lot in that same sort of strategy vein where it's not incredibly expensive, maybe not the highest production value. You're not going to see anything like, you know, you're not going to see, what was the De Niro movie that cost $1 billion on Netflix? why can't I think of it? Well, it doesn't matter. The point is you're not going to see like multi-hundred millions of dollar projects at any of those companies in original content soon.
We're speaking with Joan Salzman. She is the senior reporter on things TV, media, and digital for CNetNews.com, which you can check out 24 hours a day. And if you have a question or comment or remaining moments with Joan, make the call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And 1 week from today, we kick off year 15. One of our guests is the head of a company called White Label Productions. They're one of the top producers of unscripted TV. Among their credits, Impractical Jokers on True TV and The Masked Singer on Fox. His name is Clint Wagner. He is the head of White Label Productions. You'll meet him. You'll hear more about his company and what they're up to in the future world of unscripted TV. 1 week from today, when we kick off year 15 of this program, that's Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Smart Week Televised. And next week, we'll have 3 episodes for you in this very hour, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And coming up week from Friday, among our guests, we'll have from the popular Showtime series, The L Word, Generation Q, executive producer and showrunner Marja Lewis-Ryan, who just signed a new program development deal with Showtime. That's all coming up next week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Joan, in terms of the rest of this year, how do you see the mega content services like HBO Max, Peacock, Apple TV+, Discovery+, et cetera, Paramount Plus doing?
Well, I think there's a few really big question marks that the rest of this year into next year we're going to start to get answers to. So let's just start, well, Apple TV Plus, for example. You know, we're just now starting to lap Ted Lasso. Ted Lasso is probably its closest thing to a breakout hit so far. And Apple TV Plus, I think, has really struggled to have titles beyond The Morning Show, maybe Ted Lasso and a few others that really kind of penetrate into the zeitgeist. Ted Lasso seems to be the best one by virtue of, I think, the quality of the programming. Morning Show has definitely been one by virtue of the fact it packs such star power and had such a big budget going into it. That also helped it. I think it'll be interesting to see once, especially the morning show returns in the fall, whether Apple TV Plus is able to kind of break through with this sort of, you know, unconventional strategy of only going original, not having any licensed library for subscribers to dive into. It's very different than anyone else is doing because you really do need to have that library to keep people invested in your service and not just evacuate. It's also going to be the first time that most people are going to be having to pay. They finally have, like, phased out the extended free trials, let people continue to watch Apple TV Plus. A lot of people watch it for free for a very long time. So it's going to be, yeah, the next half of a year is going to be a really good indication of whether or not Apple can keep people on their service, even without a big library and with what seems like, you know, kind of a limited amount of titles that people are really flocking to go see. And then in terms of, you know, some of the other ones, we've got so much. It'll be really interesting to see what happens with Peacock after this Olympic season. You know, NBC Universal has been, they originally wanted Peacock to launch with the Olympics last year. Obviously that didn't happen. And we're only just starting to see now whether or not their strategy around having Peacock be one of the hubs for streaming the Olympics, this Games, this summer. It'll be interesting to see if that actually does help Peacock have wider awareness and also greater traction if people get to it and see it because they want to watch Simone Biles and then realize that, oh, this is something worth my time and attention and my investment if I want to actually subscribe and unlock other things that I see there now that I'm using it. So there's, yeah, there's a, that's, I mean, that's just a couple. It's going to be interesting to see what HBO Max, its growth is already seeming to be picking up, especially because of their day and date film strategy of having these big blockbuster Warner Brother movies available to stream same day and no added cost as they're available in their wide release in theaters. That's going to be gone mostly next year. And so it'll be interesting to see if riding on that strategy and getting their momentum really building based on that strategy over the course of this year, what happens next year when the dynamic changes for consumers and you're not getting those day and date releases, but maybe you've realized other reasons that HBO Max is worth it for you. There's going to be a lot that happens over the next half of a year and then into next for sure.
Yeah. And speaking of Apple TV Plus, I think they got some shows coming up that might penetrate the American conscious. I've had a chance to see the trailer of Foundation based on the Isaac Asimov classic novels. That could be a stunner. Shrink Next Door could be a hit. Mr. Yeah. Caruso, which comes out in a couple of weeks from Joseph Gordon-Levitt, one of the really big entrepreneurs in terms of doing it all, acting, writing, producing, directing, could be interesting. And I have to say I love Schmigadoon, the new Brigadoon-type musical comedy series with Keegan-Michael Key and a great cast of Broadway favorites like Kristen Chenoweth and Alan Cumming. That it does grow on you. We'll see if it does. It's like their second musical comedy. The other one is Central Park, the musical animated series. So we'll see how that goes. I'm curious to see what Paramount Plus is going to do. I think they really went off the track. They did not start very well. And the only thing that's been a saving grace for them seems to be the Nickelodeon shows that have come on their service. Rugrats, the new version, and iCarly, which just got renewed. So we'll see if they can get on track. Speaking of the Olympics, let's go back to Peacock for a second, and let's go back to the news that I gave at the top of the program. It seems that NBC's broadcast the coverage, by the way, from what I've seen, Joan, is fantastic. Graphics, bumpers, play-by-play commentary, unique camera angles, et cetera. But you get a sense that NBC is in big trouble on the broadcast side. It's going to be interesting how Peacock does. And one of the reasons why is that this may be the first Olympics where you have these mega content services all in play, and they are not going to play dead compared to NBC. It used to be, you know, when a broadcast network had the Olympics, everyone else played dead, didn't premiere anything, and it seems right. That that's not the case anymore. We're not in that Kansas. You know, Ted Lasso, new season, premieres in a couple of days, you know, coming up 20 Emmy nominations. And I think it would be very interesting to see what happens with NBC's broadcast coverage and whether they get really into the stats about Peacock and how much viewership they are drawing and where it ends up.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it'll be so often one of the troubling things about this transition to streaming as sort of the feature way of watching television is that we don't have as much visibility into how many people are watching things anymore. I mean, like, say what you will about Nielsen ratings and how they're flawed or how they're great. It's, at least it's one thing that people generally agree on, even if they're agreeing that it's not perfect, you know? But at least people agree on, generally, it gives you a sense of how many people are watching something and what's popular and what's a hit. But with streaming, especially in conjunction with broadcast and, you know, linear, regular linear viewing, we don't really have a sense. There's a big, like, gray cloud over a big portion of viewing right now. And I wonder if maybe the ratings that for the broadcast side of Olympics coverage for NBCU, if those are disappointing in a fashion, or, you know, to speak plainly, if they're bad enough to prompt the company to say, but look at how much viewing we had on Peacock. Now, certainly they're going to come out with some sort of metric about how great Peacock's viewing was, how great the viewing was on NBC Olympics.com and in the NBC Sports app. But it'll be – I'll be paying attention to whether or not they're very specific in how much they say. If they give, like, an average minute audience number from some of the streaming viewership to compare directly with Nielsen ratings, or if they, you know – use a kind of cushy, nobody really knows exactly what it means number, like concurrent viewers on a stream or total viewer, you know, these sort of numbers that can get really big really fast and not actually tell you very much about how popular something really was.
Yeah. And I don't know if it caught the tail end of the news note, but this may be the first Olympics where it wasn't just NBC doing English language coverage in prime time. You had CNBC and USA also doing it. I'm curious to see how that will cut into the ratings. That's a first for NBC's coverage. Usually we just broadcast alone in prime time exclusivity. John, before we go, is there a TV show that's premiering this fall or before the year is out that you're looking forward to seeing?
Oh, man, Simon, I wish I could answer that question well, but in the pandemic, I'm not planning for anything more than like a week and a half in front of me. But I will say that, you know, we talked about Ted Lasso. That just, I think the first episode just came out on Friday. And that was one program on Apple TV Plus that I did really enjoy. So I am looking forward to watching that kind of roll out week to week and seeing whether or not it kind of lives up to the first season, if the second season is able to meet the same sort of high bar set. But talk to me again in a week and a half, and then I'll have another idea for the next week and a half about what I'm excited to watch.
Well, I said Foundation, so I'm going to give you another one. Wheel of Time from Amazon, which is finally coming out in November. In fact, it came out with a screener earlier today. And from what I've seen, it looks like this will be Amazon's biggest project in the fantasy realm in a long time. This is their, before Lord of the Rings, their Game of Thrones.
Right.
So we'll see how it does.
Slowly ramping up to the gargantuan Lord of the Rings. They're going to have that come out.
Yeah, it will come out. It will come out. And keep your eye on IMBD.TV because the Judge Judy show is coming out. They have a lot of very interesting projects in the fire, including the Botch spinoff, the Greg Garcia comedy series, and a whole lot more. And they got Leverage Redemption. We had Dean Dale on the show, Joan, a couple of weeks ago, and it looks like his Almost Paradise series may go, which was on WGN America before it went to News Nation. That may come back with a second season on IMDb.TV. And Rebel, the ABC series with Kay Segal that got pulled off quickly, that may come back because it's getting into reruns now on that service. So Amazon's ad-supported service could be something else to keep an eye out for as the fall progresses. And definitely keep an eye out for Joan's work. You can find it 24/7 at news.com. That's NEWS.com. You will really enjoy it. Joan, always a pleasure. Have a fantastic week ahead, and let's do this again before the year is out.
Yes, let's. Thanks, Simon.
You're welcome, Joan. Take care. Enjoy the week.
Bye.
Joan Salzman, senior reporter for News.com, joining me here in New York. When we come back, we'll talk to the director of a new Netflix documentary special that may just change the way you think about mushrooms a whole lot. It's called Fantastic Fungi. Louis Schwartzberg will be joining us live from the West Coast. Plus, classic trivia question of the week, and maybe we get some time, some early Olympic TV notes and comments. But first, we'll pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tune.com, together reaching over 60 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, BTR is your home for herbal health with Susan Wee. That's Herbal Health with Susan Wee. Tomorrow, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 4:30 p.m. Pacific, here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best VTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of our opening Monday afternoon episode this week of Tomorrow Be Televised, wrapping up year 14 on the air. Tom and Avon with you live from New York, 89 degrees, top of the hour here in the Big Apple, nice, bright, and sunny. And we have a great guest coming your way in the next half hour, plus our classic trivia question of the week. We'll have all that for you, but first we have some words from fine folks at Audible.com. Well, another one of the shows that everyone's looking forward to is the long-awaited adaptation of one of the great comics and graphic novels of all time, The Sandman, done by the man himself, Neil Gaiman, with David Goyer. You know him from The Dark Knight and other great movies and TV shows involved as well. And it's all coming to Netflix not too far down the road. But if you want to see what The Sandman is all about, you never saw the original comic and so forth, check it out audio style with a trial run with Audible.com. You know, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and certainly lots of inspiration. Over 200,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, Tuner Radio, etc. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook, 1 month trial, great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com, and also terrific health and wellness information while it lasts. Don't forget, if you're an Amazon Prime member already, that's two audiobooks you get from the trial of one. One of those books will come from the fast-growing catalog of Audible Originals. We're talking original audio productions and podcast series, best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater, as well as great one-woman and one-man shows. So check out audibletrial.com/televised and hear for yourself how audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. Makes a great gift for you or someone you love at any time. audibletrial.com/televised. And now, joining us live from, I believe, Los Angeles, an interview exclusive, the director of the new Netflix documentary, Fantastic Fungi, Louis Schwartzberg. Louis, welcome in. All right, let me see if we have him on this line. Bear with us for just a moment. Louis, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me? I can hear you clearly.
Yes, you're coming through loud and clear. And Louis, where are you calling us from today?
I'm calling you from L.A., California, in the Hollywood Hills.
Great, great, great. So how did you get involved in this special that Netflix is premiering tomorrow about mushrooms?
Well, I've always been interested in taking people on journeys through time and scale with my movies. I've done it with the Disney Nature film, Wings of Life, the 3D IMAX movie I did with Nat Geo, Mysteries of the Unseen World, where I used time-lapse, slow-mo, micro, macro, to bend time and scale. And mushrooms are certainly the ultimate opportunity to show you things that the human eye can't see, as well as the fact that they can heal your body and heal the planet.
Mm. And once you've delved into the subject, what did you decide to make the key point of your film?
Well, when I dove into it, you know, we certainly know that, you know, mushrooms and magic mushrooms can shift your consciousness. There's a big renaissance happening right now with psychedelics. You're probably aware of that. A lot of companies have gone public raising, you know, billions of dollars in offering psilocybin treatments and clinics. But for me, the greatest discovery in making the movie is the fact that this mycelial network, this is really the organism of the mushroom. The mushroom is the fruiting body. It's like the apple to the tree. It's the largest, actually, organism on the planet. And this underground network connects plants and trees to speak to each other. So what you have is a shared economy under the ground where nutrients and communication is shared for ecosystems to flourish without greed. And that, to me, is an incredible example of how we can live our social and political lives.
Mm. By the way, if you have a question or a comment for Louis, make the call right now, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The numbers get anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the world. You're on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, Tune Radio. Once again, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find that at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Louis, when a lot of people think of mushrooms, they think of it as something to eat, especially in, like, great restaurants where they serve food with portobellos or shiitakes, depending on the cuisine. When you talk about this underground network, are those two varieties of mushrooms the big varieties like they are in gourmet food, or is it a whole different brand that seems to get the attention?
Yeah, again, the mushroom is the fruit, like the apple, And the mycelium is the organism that's under the ground, similar to a tree. So the every time the mycelium network wants to, you know, reproduce, it sends up a mushroom. And those are the beautiful mushrooms we enjoy eating, which, by the way, are really healthy for you. They have as much protein as meat, certainly like less fat. And there are many, you know, culinary chefs now that are using mushrooms in all kinds of dishes. I mean, mushrooms are exploding, but beyond the fact that they taste good, they're also good for your body. Lion's mane has been shown to help, you know, the neurological pathways in your brain, decreasing Alzheimer's. Lion's mane is really healthy for, as an immune defense system, even with COVID, or possibly with, you know, cancer. When I say COVID, it just adds to your immune system. It's not going to defend you from COVID, but whatever you can do to boost up your immunity is something that you want to do. And listen, penicillin is a mold. That's a fungi, okay? It saved more human lives than any other medicine in the history of mankind. So it's just really a giant world. It's actually the largest kingdom on the planet. It's not a plant, six times more species than plants. And we're only scratching the surface of the healing benefits that mushrooms can offer us. In addition, perhaps the greatest natural solution for climate change, because the CO2 in the atmosphere that gets sucked into plants and trees, well, 70% of that carbon is stored under the ground in the mycelial network. So if we stop putting carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, scientists believe that in 5 years, you know, this relationship between mycelium and plants and trees could actually clean up the atmosphere.
You're speechless. To what ends of the earth did you and your production team go to capture what you did in this documentary?
What did we go through to capture? Well, I started 15 years ago, and actually I've been rolling nonstop on time-lapse mushrooms and flowers for 4 decades, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week in my studio. That's what it takes to shoot things in time-lapse. I'm basically recording 2 seconds of screen time per 24 hours. And it's a tremendous amount of work. And the biggest investment is your time. And this started a long time ago when I'm sure I was inspired by taking a psychedelic journey in college. But I've always been interested in, you know, doing a deeper dive as to, you know, what is it that makes life flourish? When I did Wings of Life for Disney Nature, which was narrated by Meryl Streep, that was all about pollination, the intersection between the animal world and the plant world. In Fantastic Fungi, it's narrated by Brie Larson. And again, I'm telling the story from the point of view of the mushroom. In Wings of Life, I told the story from the point of view of the flower, you know, seducing bees, bats, hummingbirds, and butterflies. In both cases, they're love stories. They're gorgeous, beautiful experiences that I hope make you fall in love with the planet in order to protect it.
When you decide you're going to do a film like this from the point of view of the mushroom, how do you structure the storyline of your work? And secondly, when you have someone like Brie Larson, you know, superb award-winning actress, to narrate, what guidance do you give her to play the mushroom?
Well, we needed a strong superhero. I mean, look, the mushroom and the flowers, for me, are more the feminine side of nature. I think in programming, we've overdone the macho killer be killed, survival of the fittest, storytelling narratives that are traditionally part of almost all nature films, and actually a lot of programming in general. It's all about fear and anxiety. What you're learning about when you look at pollination and you look at what the mushrooms do, it's all about connection. It's about nurturing. It's about, you know, giving birth to life. It's about connections, relationships. That's a story that isn't told, but it's the most incredible story on planet Earth. It's billions of little interactions that is the foundation of life. So it's easy to go for the jugular and, you know, show the kill or be killed kind of story. But it's a little more complex to get people to, you know, feel love and to feel or laugh. That takes, I think, a lot more artistry.
We're speaking with Louis Schwartzberg. He is the director of the new Netflix documentary special, Fantastic Fungi. It premieres tomorrow. And Louis joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour. On Tomorrow will be televised. Great to have you with us this Monday afternoon as we kick off the final week of year 14 of this program. Simon Abbott with you live from the Big Apple, 89 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment for our guest, ring that question or comment in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Don't forget, coming up on Friday, Eddie Muller, the host of Noir Alley, the head of the Film Noir Foundation, and regular host on Turner Classic Movies. He is our lead guest on Friday's episode. We'll talk to him about how Noir Alley is doing, about the brand-new revised edition of his great book about the subject, Dark City, which we will be offering as a classic trivia question prize next week. And we'll also ask him whether he might do some TV noir, you know, shows like Meet McGraw, Johnny Staccato, and others that had the film noir atmosphere of the 50s and early 1960s, where they may become seen or showcased on Noir Alley. Eddie Muller, Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Louis, with this kind of a movie, like other nature programming, films and TV specials, you always have the challenge, you know, you don't direct Mother Nature or Father Nature. Mother Nature or Father Nature directs you. So how right. do you approach the subject and have your cameras ready for that moment that you showcase that mushroom or you showcase that scene of nature?
It's really a great question, and for the most part, what you're saying is true, but when it came to, like, Fantastic Fungi, and when it comes to, like, you know, Wings of Life, which was, again, the plants and flowers, I am more in control, and I am able to set that up, and I am able to really, you know, create the narrative for it, which I think is way more important than the old-fashioned stories I said earlier of Kill or Be Killed. To tell the story of the complex relationships that are the foundation of life on our planet is what we need to wake up to right now, I think, in order to save our planet. I mean, look at what happened with COVID. Everyone's freaking out about this virus. Well, guess what? There's more organisms on the outside of your body than there are people on the planet. If you have that awareness, then maybe you don't get scared of something as small as that. You realize it's everywhere, and you have a deeper understanding of life on this planet. So what's great about doing stories that I've done, I am in control. I do create these complex setups with time-lapse cameras and motion control cinematography in order to capture things that the human eye can't see. That's really the critical part. And what that does also is that it expands your awareness, expands your consciousness to be able to look beyond the human perception. I mean, human perception is 24 frames per second, right? But to see world, to see the world from the point of view of a flower or a redwood tree, we would look like time-lapse ants running around. To see the world from the point of view of a hummingbird, we're like slow-motion giants. And so to be able to do that, you know, it's actually like similar to Avatar. I mean, when Avatar, the core story to Avatar was the mother tree. I think if you take the mother tree out of Avatar, you don't have the top grossing film of all time. You take the Force out of Star Wars, it's just another action adventure flick. There has to be a spiritual energy inside of these movies, and nature is that spiritual energy.
Mm-hmm. Is there any attempt in the film to showcase how mushrooms have been displayed or portrayed or showcased in entertainment? I'm thinking, for example, I remember there was a scene in Fantasia, the great Walt Disney classic animated movie, where mushrooms are dancing, you know, dancing and prancing all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, in Fantasia, that's one of my favorite scenes of all time. And I think also, as I mentioned in Avatar, a lot of people have looked at Fantastic Fungi and called it a live-action Avatar. Mushrooms are enigmatic. They're mysterious. People who go out and forage for mushrooms are very secretive about their locations. You know, mushrooms can heal you. They can feed you. They can kill you. There's a lot of mycophobia against mushrooms. We're trying to increase mycophilia, which is a love of nature. But mushrooms are powerful. And because they're so powerful and because they're so mysterious, they really capture our imagination. I mean, one of the sequences in the movie we talk about is the Stoned Ape Hypothesis. that there could be the missing link between the hominids and the human species, that these hominids were foraging in Africa millions of years ago, you know, eating these magic mushrooms. And what they did is they expanded their consciousness, gave them the ability to build better tools, better cognition, the development of language skills, and the human brain tripled in size in a short amount of time. There's no other theory that can explain why the human brain tripled in size. And that could be the missing link between the hominid and the human Homo sapien species.
Hmm. What was it like working with Brie Larson?
Well, she's wonderful. I mean, she naturally, I think, has, you know, the feminine energy in her. I think she definitely believes in empowering women's abilities to exceed and excel in all aspects of life. And for her to be the first superhero woman for Marvel, I think, is a testament to her energy.
Mm-hmm. Netflix, particularly in the last couple of years, has had a great track record of not only unscripted television series, but also a great track record, particularly in the area of documentary specials, nature documentary specials. They've won several Academy Awards for their work, some Academy Award nominations. Was this the place that you always wanted to take Fantastic Fungi to? Was it a case of you going to them or them coming to you and saying, we want you to present this on our service?
Yeah. Our distribution model, I think, was really unique. What I really wanted to do was I wanted to show this in the theaters on the big screen first. So that's what I embarked on. And what we did was, you know, we launched it in Denver, where it's the first city that's decriminalized mushrooms. And then we went to Portland, the first state to decriminalize the use of magic mushrooms. And we packed theaters. We sold out without marketing, without advertising. We created a movement. And we brought people together, people that are into not only psychedelics, but foraging, permaculture, culinary, health and wellness. And we were on a, you know, terrific ride. We were one of the top, you know, documentary films, and we got 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. And when COVID hit, we had to pivot, and then we had to go online. So we, for a while, we were on Apple TV, and then on Amazon. And now I think the timing is perfect for us to be able to launch it as we license it to Netflix coming up soon. And now we'll be able to reach even a broader audience, which is perfect because the timing is just right for the story about mushrooms, about connection, how to heal the planet, how to heal ourselves.
Well, since you brought up the controversy about the decriminalization, of magic mushrooms,
yeah,
in various states around the country. How did you make the case for decriminalization, and has anything been done since the film has been screened in theaters?
Yeah, in the movie itself, we don't talk about the political movement, but it certainly drove audiences to the theater, which is really great. I mean, in the movie, we just showed, like, the medical research that's going on at places like Johns Hopkins, NYU, UCLA, and there's, like, you know, dozens of universities now that are doing clinical trials. We're actually engaged in a clinical trial. I think you'll enjoy hearing this here in Santa Monica. At the Pacific Neuroscience Institute, I created a special 40-minute movie that patients take while they take psilocybin and the clinical trials to treat alcohol addiction. So as they're coming on to the psilocybin, you're watching this beautiful, you know, movie on a giant 85-inch digital screen that's about the oneness and the connection of nature. It's music, no narration, and just gorgeous blended imagery of rhythms and patterns of nature. And I believe that's the first film ever created specifically for people that are going on a journey. But this movement is big. I mean, you got companies on Wall Street now that are, you know, $1.5 billion in value that have created synthetic psilocybin and opening up clinics across the country and around the world. This is a major movement that's happening everywhere. So, you know, in the movie itself, I just talk about the medical treatments that are going on. I'm sure you must be aware of Michael Pollan's book, bestseller, How to Change Your Mind. This is a movement that's going global, and I think we've helped catalyze it, and it's really capturing the zeitgeist of the moment.
Mm-hmm. We have a few more minutes with Louis Schwartzberg. He is the director of Fantastic Fungi. That's the documentary special coming to Netflix starting tomorrow on your smart TV set or smart TV device. That's how you can get it. If you have a question or a comment, make the call, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And don't forget, coming up in a few minutes, Patrick Trivia Question of the Week, National Geographic Jigsaw Puzzle available for you if you know the answer. About 50 years ago, there was a television program, Louis, called One Step Beyond. And one of the most famous episodes of the series, and perhaps the most controversial one, that was dealing with psychic phenomena based on true cases, a dramatization based on true cases, was John Newland, the host, the director of the series, actually testing a mushroom called the sacred mushroom that, according to scientists who were looking at this mushroom that was grown in Mexico, possibly had psychic powers. Does your documentary do anything with that? Or what's your sense 60 years later about that argument that some mushrooms might be able to enhance someone's ability, someone's psychic ability, EST, psychic phenomena, so on and so forth?
You know, I saw that clip a long time ago, which is really remarkable. But the discovery of, you know, psychedelic mushrooms, what we call magic mushrooms, occurred like in the 50s in Mexico when, you know, Gordon Wasson, who was like a scientist, went down there and was the first white man to take a psychedelic journey. And then it got published in Life magazine. And then it got thrown on the doorstep of every American across, you know, the country. And that was one of the first things that triggered the psychedelic revolution. Now, psychedelics were being then researched at places like Harvard and Stanford, and there was a cutting edge of psychedelic psychological research. And unfortunately, when Richard Nixon, you know, declared a war on drugs, he included, you know, mushrooms and LSD as Schedule I drugs, because it was his way of getting back at the political enemies, the hippies, the anti-war movement, you know, people of color. And we're still suffering from the negative effects of that today with the war on drugs, with people of color being incarcerated. So this was the leading edge of psychiatry. It's happening now in, you know, dozens and dozens of universities around the world and across the country. And there's a psychedelic revolution that's happening now that is going to explode.
We have a few minutes. We have about a minute left. Louis, what's next for you in terms of a project for television?
Well, thank you for asking that. By the way, I have a series on Netflix called Moving Art. That's really what inspired me to actually create this movie for people with psychedelic journeys in clinical environments. It's called Moving Art. Season 3, we have about 22 episodes. It's music, nature, and no narration. And I've gotten hundreds of comments from viewers claiming that it's a healing modality. Parents with children with autism, teenagers who are suicidal said it saved your life, people that are, you know, dealing with cancer, post-op, pre-op, and people with end-of-life anxiety. It's remarkable the reactions I'm getting from people that are watching the Moving Art series. So I highly recommend people watch that as well. And my next movie is called Gratitude Revealed. And I've got thought leaders and celebrities talking and ordinary people talking about gratitude.
Again, the special is called Fantastic Fungi, all about the very unique world of mushrooms. It debuts tomorrow on Netflix, available on most smart TV sets and smart devices. And also check out Moving Art, now in its third season, on that very same service. For more details about both programs, go to Netflix.com. It's Netflix.com. Once again, Fantastic Fungi premieres tomorrow. Louis Schwartzberg, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations on both projects. And I'll tell you, if you get season 4 on Netflix, we'd love to have you back and talk on Moving Art. It sounds like a really winning and very, very special, empowering project for a lot of people. It's been a pleasure to have you on.
Pleasure to be on, and enjoy Moving Art. It'll take you on a journey through time and scale.
You got it, Louis. Take care. All the greatest. Louis Schwartzberg, joining us live from Los Angeles. Once again, Fantastic Fungi premieres tomorrow on Netflix. Time for our classic trivia question of the week. If your person directs the answer, you will get a National Geographic Jigsaw Puzzle. And since we're dealing with Olympics for most of our program, again, we offered this question for the first time a week ago. Here it is again. What's the name of the Olympic fanfare? That's the musical fanfare you hear you know, all over the place on NBC Universal's coverage of the Olympic Games from Tokyo. What's the name of the Olympic fanfare? It actually came from the 1960s and then got a new version about a decade or so ago by John Williams, the Oscar-winning composer. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to close your name and where you're emailing from. First with the correct answer, you win that National Geographic Jigsaw Puzzle. If you don't get a winner by the end today, post the question tomorrow on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So do so, and all the very best. Once again, I want to give a shout out to everybody that came down with our family to celebrate the wonderful wedding of my sister's daughter and my niece, Melissa, to her new beau and new partner in life, Ted. They're now Melissa and Ted Sandler, and they are on their way very soon on their super honeymoon. So thanks to everybody who came down. It was a magnificent time in Baltimore at the Renaissance Mark Howard Place Hotel. Super place, super facility, super time. Thanks to all, one and all. And thank you for all the Facebook notices, by the way, that you posted, all of you out there, to the news of that event. And finally, I wanted to just share with you that while I was also down in Baltimore, I did catch some of the coverage on Saturday and over the Sunday on NBC Sports Network. And I want to say two things. First of all, the rowing coverage, maybe the best ever done for television. And I want to congratulate whoever is producing that coverage on NBC Sports Network and the folks, the play-by-play by Brandon Burke and the commentator Lindsay Shoup. It is just marvelous. They're a great team. Brandon, by the way, is a star on the rise in the world of play-by-play sportscasting. And so is Noah Eagle, the son of Ian Eagle. Caught him with his partner Kyle Montgomery doing the play-by-play and commentary, respectively, on three-on-three women's basketball. I think that's going to be a big hit at the Tokyo, no matter how it turns out. I think that's going to be a big hit at the Tokyo Olympics, and the USA's got a good team. They gave France a pretty good game, 19-10. Super, super game. So once again, congratulations to Noah Eagle and Kyle Montgomery for their coverage, and Brendan Burke and Lindy Shoup on rowing. If you see the rowing coverage anywhere on the networks of NBC Universal, check it out. It is marvelous, the best ever for that sport. Maybe it should get an Emmy a sports Emmy nomination. Whoever that producer is, bravo. Again, Friday, Eddie Muller from Noir Alley will be my lead guest. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. And check out our podcast. They're available 24/7 on iTunes, Speaker Podcast, TuneIn.com, the iRadio Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, also at Verbal, Amazon Music as well. And don't forget our new website, Tomorrow Be Televised, at podsite.io. Tomorrow Be Televised at podsite.io. And that way you can get our program as well. Love to hear from you. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Love to get your thoughts on where TV is at, where it's going, the rest of 2021 and beyond. So use that email. Also find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. However you respond, we respond in kind, because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio, the distributors of this program. Andy Toews, Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sonnenberg, head of content. Website services provided by PodSite, the new internet avenue for podcasts. For more details, go to podsite.io. Our web coordinator is Kentaris Focus. Tomorrow Be Televised is brought to you by Audible.com and Amazon Division. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. For a free audio book or two and much more, it's audibletrial.com/televised. Makes a great gift any time of the year for you or someone you love. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of your week. We are back on Friday with Eddie Muller from Noir Alley, you know where, Blog Talk Radio speaker and TuneIn Radio, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, also on Amazon Music, Verbal, the iRadio Podcast Network, and Apple Podcasts. Whatever you're doing to now and then, please make it safe, make it great. If you haven't gotten the vaccine, check with your doctor and follow his recommendations. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned. As Eddie Muller would say, see you in the shadows.